The second of the criteria is that the item has to be primarily and customarily used to serve a medical purpose. What is a medical purpose? So we're talking about speech. The medical purpose of any item or any service, any treatment whatsoever, is that it treats a condition, it treats an illness, it treats an injury, treats a disability. And a speech-generating device does that. It provides treatment. It serves as treatment for severe communication impairments. So when you have a person in the clinical setting for the purposes of assessment, you're going to see them first as having a whole body neurological impairment. For communication devices, there are six or seven that are the most common: ALS, cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, brainstem stroke, and traumatic brain injury. Those are whole body impairments, and they will affect multiple body systems for most people. Among the list are conditions that are developmental or acquired. Among the list are conditions that are stable and those that are progressive. But all of them create common impairments to speech in the form of expressive communication. And those five ways or five types of impairments have their own diagnostic labels, and they're listed here on this slide: dysarthria, apraxia, aphasia, phonia, and then the last is a phrase that I've invented. I don't know that it's accepted generally by the speech language pathology community, but for individuals with developmental disability and autism in particular, we're lacking an effective phrase to describe the communication impairment that they experience. So this is just an example of something that you can use for that. Now, one of the mistakes that speech language pathologists make in their reports is they'll say this person has, they'll remember that I'm supposed to mention treatment. And they'll say this person presents cerebral palsy and the speech generating device is intended to treat Johnny's cerebral palsy. That's not correct. The person is going to have cerebral palsy or ALS at the same level of intensity with the speech generating device or not. It's going to treat Johnny's dysarthria, and it's going to materially improve the adverse communication impairment that the person's cerebral palsy is creating, but the cerebral palsy will remain. Consider a wheelchair. If a person has quadriplegia, they're going to be just as quadriplegic with the wheelchair or not, but they are going to be able to have their mobility needs met. So remember that the whole idea, all of the professional literature that we can rely on, to the extent someone pushes you up against the wall and say, prove this, is going to support use of a communication aid for these five communication impairments rather than for the broader neurological conditions. And there's no concern about a communication device not treating ALS. Nothing treats ALS. But nonetheless, people should be able to get a communication device for that. Nothing is going to undo a spinal cord injury, right? That's the research that Chris Reeve had been so animated about and so active in raising funds for. They don't have anything that's going to effectively treat that yet. But nonetheless, people who have spinal cord injury get wheelchairs. And we don't want to get tripped up by the fact that, well, you're not treating the primary impairment, so therefore you can't have what you need for that. That's an incorrect approach, and that would be the kind of pushback you'd get from funding program staff that never heard of a speech-generating device. I mean, we live with this day in and day out. But the people who run health-based funding programs hear about AAC devices, you know, once a month, maybe. Or if it's an insurance program, maybe once a year, if ever before the time that your client presents their need. There are a lot of programs now that still have never encountered a communication device funding request.